Wow, that's the book we read. I'm not gonna lie, I had to take a lot of breaks.
And I just think it gives people a better understanding.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Living a Life Through Books, the podcast about everything bookish. I'm your host, Dr. Shanaz Ahmed, and today is Book Club. Please remember, we do discuss the whole book, which may involve spoilers. Before I bring up our conversation, I wanted to say that your support of my podcast means a lot to me. The easiest way is to buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/LLTB podcast. Every coffee you buy me helps keep me alert and this podcast going. I'll add the link in the show notes and I thank you. One more thing. I want to talk a bit about a great audiobook app, Libro.fm, lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers, and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of this podcast can get 2 books for the price of 1. Go to Libro.fm, that is Libro.fm, and enter code LLTBpodcast. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores. I'll add the link in the show notes.
Welcome, everyone, to Book Club. Today, we're doing As Long as the Lemon Tree Grow by Zulfa Khatun. And first thoughts, who wants to go?
I really enjoyed the book. And I think it was so in with the present day situation. And the love, the hope, the how much they look forward to the future, you know, and then some medically related issues, which is something which everybody now we have to, you know, especially the mental issues. Yes, we have to talk about it, get medical attention if needed or not, depending on the situation. So I think this is a book about love, hope, and then freedom for a country, which sometime might happen in the near future. I don't know. It's more about hope and and then patriotism. That's what I thought this is about.
I just want to apologize and say that I actually did not read the book. Yeah, you know what?
Astaghfirullah. Oh, guys, astaghfirullah is a Muslim term for when... Like,
God
it's
forbid.
Like you committed the most cardinal sin and you ask for forgiveness from God. And it's like, when, you know, when someone says,
no, you're right.
And I'm like, astaghfirullah, oh my gosh.
I know. So anyway, and between the two book clubs, I completely forgot which book was for December and November. So I switched the book. So sorry about that. So that will keep your book club short anyway, because apparently I talk a lot.
You do not talk a lot. It's all good. We're great. It's fine that switch ups happen. We're happy to have you. But this is my personal recommendation. This is my personal recommendation. Okay. This book is something I think everyone needs to read. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. We picked this book, I think, before this whole Israel-Palestine thing came up. Okay. We picked it before that. And this book is all about Syria.
Right.
But then you have this whole Palestine thing coming up, and I'm seeing all these videos of what's going on there. And even my cousin's like, did you see these videos? They're doing surgery without anesthesia. And I'm going, yeah, I know. I'm like, I've become numb in a sense. Like, I'm like, yeah, I know. That's the book we read, except it's Palestine. But it's very... So my recommendation, Rifat, is read it. It's it's cold. It's bone-chilling. Like, it is very bone-chilling. It's a rough read. I'm not going to lie. I had to take a lot of breaks. I just couldn't handle it. It was hard, but it was one of these books that, like, one of my first thoughts is, as hard as it is worth the read. My only job is to read it. I'm so fortunate that I don't have to live it.
So true.
That is my first thought
on the book. Yeah, you're right. Okay. And I just wanted to let you know that I do have it downloaded. It's just so that's on my list, and I will definitely, the next one is going to be this. Thank you.
No worries. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. I really enjoy this book. I loved the love story, and I loved the focus on, even though how circumstances are horrible and awful and all these horrible things happen, and she still finds her way to joy and seeing the color in the gray. And so I really liked that part.
My first thoughts were, I agree, like, everybody should read this to understand the suffering that people go through, especially in war-torn regions. It also, though, like, speaks to the resilience of the human spirit, you know, to make it through that. And you realize that people are making it through. Like, this is a story, but there are real people that are living this reality, and they're surviving in whatever ways and capacities that they can. And I just think it gives people a better understanding of what refugees have been through. I wish, from my own personal perspective, that it had included a little bit more of the, like, politics of, like, why all of that was happening. But I also recognize it was written for high schoolers, so maybe the author didn't feel like they needed to get into the politics of it. They just needed to show the suffering and the resilience and the love, you know, that love brings us through. So
I did not know it was written for high schoolers. I'm honestly,
At the library, here at our county library, they have it in the high school section. So
I'm kind of shocked, to be very honest, because I feel it was very heavy. I don't know. I mean, okay, so it begs the question of age and education, and at what age can children handle how much hardship and pain, you know? So I'm not, you know, I don't know. It's just, it was really, really, really rough. That's all. You know, I'm not here to ban books or to be like, no, you know, I'm not in that camp, obviously not, but I'm just kind of like, what age can people handle what? So that's what my thought was on this. Dr. Jen.
I was just going to comment that these characters in the story are high schoolers. Like, that's how old they are. They're 18. So they are living that. I think it's appropriate for high school. Like, my daughter is 15. I think she could handle it. I think it would be a good introduction to those topics. And then, again, like you mentioned before, too, the understanding what refugees are going through. I think that's things that they are talking about a lot in high school these days, and getting that perspective is important.
It says on Amazon that it's for 17 plus. I just looked it up, but you said even a 15-year-old could handle, so pretty good.
Okay, 17 plus. That's technically rated R. I'm just saying.
I thought the same thing, rated R, yes.
Okay, Shauna, you have your hand up, and welcome, Sophia.
My thoughts, exactly what Dr. Jen was saying, because the characters are themselves 17 and 18. So I think, you know, high schoolers are also the same age group. I think they can handle it. And especially now, I think when we were growing up, it was a totally different scenario. But now the kids are much aware of what is happening around them, and they are tuned way more than we think they can handle. So I think it could be a good book for a high schooler to know what is happening and what has happened, and how it's not the end of the world. There is something else, you know, the resilience, especially when you hear, like, especially the mental health issues, you hear about children committing suicide for trivial things at times. You know, you think, no, there's a world out there which they have to see and learn. So that, you know, yes, I get mental health issue it's a health issue, but still, I think children should know what's happening out in the world. So I echo whatever Dr. Jen said too.
Sophia, first thoughts about this book. I just want to add that as I was reading this book, I was thinking about you a lot because I was like, you know, Sophia said, rough book. We gave you a break last time, and this book is probably the roughest book we've read. So, right. So Sophia, your first thoughts, please.
So the thing is that whatever the book, I actually love the book, and whatever the book talks about, it's not fiction anymore. It's basically that's what's going on. So unfortunately, the book is a mirror of the circumstances these days. So it is it was a very tough book to read. And it was, as I was reading it, I was like, but the way the author handled the book, she put moments of relief in there. So that was a good thing. But I absolutely love the book. I think this, of all the books I have read for this book club, this is the one I love most. And I finished it in 2 days.
That's, wow. I'm really happy to hear that, because I literally thought, oh, great, we're going to lose Sophia after this book. Like, I was like, okay, all right, next time, like, what are we going to do? But I'm really glad to hear you love the book.
Yeah.
So let's do themes. I will tell you, I remember the book clearly. I just don't remember character names. This is so weird. Like, I remember the book, but I don't remember character names. But before we do the characters, what are the main themes that this book portrays? And what do you think the author wanted to be the main themes? What was the author's intention, and what finally got on print? I'll take the obvious theme, war, and the pluses and minuses of war, if there are any pluses at all. You know, I don't even know if there's a plus at all. You know, there's always like, there's a positive and a negative of a situation, but I have never found a positive to any war ever in the history of man. I don't care what war it was. I have never found a positive reason. Maybe I'm just a dreamer. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I just believe in a utopia, whatever, but I've just never found a positive. But hence, you know, here we are, another war, another book. And that's one of the major themes, I thought. But then it also could be a subtler theme, because it's just the backdrop of what's happening. Shamas, go ahead.
I think another theme was patriotism, you know, because how difficult both the main characters find to leave the place, because it's their country, it's their motherland. So for any refugee, how tough it's going to be to leave their motherland, especially during those circumstances, you know? So I think patriotism was another big theme in this.
I like that. I really like that. I'm just, you know, I am, what is the word? An opportunist, because I believe I'm a citizen of the world. So I'm patriotic to planet Earth. So I as much as I appreciate patriotism, and I appreciate how this book talks about it and how they had a rough time leaving their motherland. And I understand this, the motherland, and there's home. I mean, I love my home. And when I'm away from my home for long enough, I just need home, and I get all of that. But then there's part of me that goes, we all are human beings. We have this earth. Just, we've got to make our home where we make it. At some point, you know, patriotism and me just don't go well sometimes. That's just my thought on it. But you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. That is a theme in this book. Dr. Jen.
I don't know if you guys do the audiobooks usually, right? At the end of the actual book, there's an author's note. And I don't know if that was included in part of your audiobook, but she explains what her purpose was in the book in the author's note there. And so she says that she kept getting the question about when people found out she was from Syria, they would be like, oh, what's up with Syria? What's going on there? Nobody knows. in her social circle and or in this country in general, what's going on in Syria. All we see is just facts in the news and, you know, bloodshed, but nobody really understands. And so she wanted to tell the stories of the people who are living there, basically, and to show that the people, the refugees who are coming from there are not, we're actual, you know, people, you know, not just numbers that are being portrayed in the media. So, and then she also talks about wanting to break some stereotypes. And so the main characters, despite wearing the hijab, are very free-spirited. And her husband turns his back on toxic masculinity and was very caring with his siblings. And so, and then she wanted to make a love story reminiscent of Jane Austen, was her last point. So I liked her words there.
Now I have to read it, the Jane Austen.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. A love story reminiscent of Jane Austen. And it was a beautiful love story. The only love story that comes close to this is the book we read. What's the name, you guys? We read it. It was a Muslim
author. Against the Loveless World.
No, not that one. Oh. No, not that one. The one where, you know, the kid was molested in the near the washing
machine. All My Rage.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That love story that was so touching. This one reminds me a little bit of that more. I mean, it's a very, very beautiful, beautiful love story. You're absolutely right. It was so tender. Oh, just, I don't know. It's just so, so, so beautiful. Themes, Erin or Sophia, themes that this book touches on.
Resilience is, I think, one of the common themes that we have seen in other novels also, and here also. Extremely resilient that girl is, no matter what it takes to survive, she's a survivor. So yeah, that's, and it's courage, definitely. Sacrifice.
Absolutely. Sacrifice, resilience, courage. You know, I'm wondering, is hope one of the themes in this book? Hope, because it's not just hope of her survival, but it's also hope for her brother, you know, because do we ever find out what happened to her brother? You know, I don't think we find out. We kind of find out that the last we find out is that someone said he was alive, but that's all we know. But we don't know at the end of the book if he's still alive or not. But there was some news that, hey, your brother was alive. And that's, oh man, that was such a scene to be like, do I leave? Do I not leave? My brother is possibly alive, possibly not. But yeah, hope, not just, like I said, for her survival, for her escape, hope for her life, for her marriage, in that kind of a, you know, situation. It's almost like a plant growing in desolate conditions, like to see such beauty in this desolate landscape. That was a beautiful contrast when they brought that love story in that hope. Erin. Themes.
I mean, I think freedom is one of the themes here, a minor theme, but I do think it's a theme, and that's what they're fighting for. I don't really understand all the politics of it, as I mentioned earlier, but they are fighting for their freedom, and they're fighting not to be oppressed by a dictatorship. So that's a theme, and I think that's a theme that maybe like Americans can relate to. And I don't know if it was purposeful that she's, you know, she didn't get into a lot of the politics, but she at least portrayed that and conveyed that in the novel. I think that was very strategic if it was purposeful. Fate, I think, is another theme that gets brought up. And I loved the underlying theme of faith and their religion that was interwoven throughout the whole story. That was really beautiful. Like, it was part of their love story. It was part of their community and like why they were both doing what they were doing. So I thought those were all themes as well.
I loved the faith and their love story without sexualizing it. It wasn't, you know, like these days, boy meets girl, and then you have a whole freaking chapter of just hot, steamy, whatever else. And you're like, and somehow I feel like these days, it's almost like, wait, you have to have sex to show that these people are in love. But there was no sex in this book. And yet the strength of that love was just un-effing believable. It was just magnified so much. I just was like, wow. And I have so much respect for the way the author nurtured that relationship and love story within the climate of their religion of Islam, which I loved. I really loved. I feel like, honestly, today, you know, I feel like the kids today, even in America, Muslim kids today, I think they lose the sense of charm of just getting to know each other and just really loving each other for who they are. And, you know, rather than just being like, all right, let's get into a hotel room. Let's do this, you know? And I don't know. There was something charming about it. And also, I don't know, but it was glaringly slapped me on the face that this book is so different from all the other books, because almost every book has so much sex in it. And this book stood up and said, I don't have sex in it. I will not have sex in it, but I am freaking amazing. And that's, I just had so much respect for that. Shanaz?
Can we call it a kosher love story?
Yeah, I wanted to call it halal.
Halal. It's halal. It's an Islamic word. Yep. So kosher is, you know, Jewish kosher. And Islamically, it's halal. So this is halal love story. Yes. But, you know, the interesting thing about halal love stories is that sometimes I don't like halal love stories. Like, I don't like Christian love stories. I'll tell you why. Because there are times I feel there's so much sexual tension and it's just, and they're just like, no, we're not going to do this because of religion. You know, there's so much, and religion is beat up. Like, it's just constantly hammered into you. You're a Christian, you're a Christian, you're a Christian. You know, there's so much of that, but that wasn't hammered in here. Religion wasn't in here, and it wasn't there to brainwash everyone who read it that, oh, these are Muslims, this is Islam, this is, it wasn't that. It was so beautiful that these were two characters who were just respectful of each other. That's it. Yes, it was a halal love story, but I loved it. I don't know. It's the whole Jane Austen in Syria. Yeah. I mean, seriously, Jane Austen in Syria. I mean, how much better, how much more unique can this story get, right? Okay. Any other themes?
Fear.
Fear.
One of the major themes.
Fear of?
It was on every page. Fear was on every page, in physical form, in as a hallucination, as it was the underlying current was fear continuously. So yeah, basically facing your internal fears, facing external fears, dealing with them, managing them, how to cope with them, how to fight them, continuous battling your fears.
I think rage was also a theme.
What was that?
She was angry.
Angry, anger.
Anger, rage was also a theme, I thought.
Yeah. What do you think people were angry against? Just their situation, anger at the war, anger at being denied a life that they should have?
Mm-hmm. Anger at rage because she couldn't help who she wanted to help because there was no medicines, there was no hospital supplies. That was also another part of her. You know, she wanted to help people, but she couldn't. Then because of the current situation, you know, with the war going on and everything. So it's rage. An 18-year-old is unable to do so many things. So I think basically she was also angry with everything.
Okay. Erin.
I want to talk a little bit more about the fear. I really appreciated that when they were, you know, even personifying fear through, is it Quaff or I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, Koff. They were showing that sometimes, like, it paid to listen to fear, like the bombing of the hospital, and she was able to evacuate everybody, well, most people, versus, like, sometimes it kept her from doing things that would have made her safe, you know, like, or helped her find joy. So at first, Koff didn't want her to even talk to Kenan, right? Like, it was this very like, no, like that's, you can't trust him sort of a thing. So yeah, I appreciated that fear, like they were showing that fear is, there are sometimes good reasons for us to have fear, and it's telling us something, and we maybe get not addicted to it, but you know, like we let it in, and then it can very soon take over everything, and it can help us to make poor choices, or you know, push us to make poor choices too in our life. And that's a little bit about anxiety too, right? Like I think that's a message that a lot of people need to hear and understand. In our society today, we have like higher levels than ever before of anxiety here, like you know, like clinical level anxiety that needs to be treated with therapy, medications, etc. And it's so hard for people to understand like how that it happens. And it's really that, you know, like maybe you were fearful about a situation and it helped you. And then, you know, it kind of sits there and it, you listen to that voice more and more. So I thought it was a really great way to show that.
I also, when you brought up fear and stuff, I just realized there's also the theme of evil prevailing among evil. You know, who was that guy? The guy she had to negotiate with the money. You know who I'm talking about?
M.
Was it M?
Mm-hmm. A-M-M, the one who
M-M-M-M, yes. Amr. I think it was A-M-R, Amr. Because yeah. my audio, I was like getting Amr. But it's, what if you read the book, is it like A-M-M? It doesn't matter. So A-M. I just thought that theme of, you know, you have this whole book of resilience and good surviving in all of this, but then you also have the theme of this negativity and evil surviving and opportunism. Maybe I'm judging, you know, but everyone has to survive, right? I mean, people have to survive, but I don't know. It's just, you have all of that. You know, it's this black, white, and gray areas while we're dealing with all of this. And I just thought that was like something. That's one of the themes. Anything else? Any other themes that you think we've missed?
Well, the lemon trees, they were a theme. They were there everywhere. So they were a metaphor also.
Metaphor for homeland?
Yeah, metaphor for homeland, metaphor for good memories also. Basically metaphor for survival, because that's what the book says, as long as the lemon trees grow.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do we want to move into favorite characters, or do we want to go into favorite scenes? What do we want to do? Characters or scenes? Okay, characters. Favorite characters. Who were the characters? We have Kauf, Layla, Keenan, who are the main people? Keenan, what was the main character's name?
Salama.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Salama and then Keenan.
Layla, how can you even forget her name, Shanaz?
Shanaz, I have been dealing with craziness this whole week. I can forget.
I know, no. Because I remembered it very well, because one day you take it off, it's my daughter's name. So how Salam? Can you forget?
Salam?
Salma.
Yeah, but Salma, this is Salama.
Yeah, take off the day.
No, you take off the name and still Salam. Hey, sorry, take off the A and transpose the M with the A to make Salma. But anyway, Salama, and am I missing someone else? Layla, right? Layla was her sister, Layla. Right?
Layla, mom, the mother, Hamza.
Mother? Whose mother?
Mother.
Salama's mom. She was there for a short few scenes. Then her brother, Hamza.
Mom, Salama's family, Dad. I think, were minor characters. I think the major character was Layla. Before we go into characters, because I'd really like to discuss characters a lot, Rifat, there is going to be a huge spoiler in this. I'm just letting you know with one of the characters. Okay. And I'm just trying to, are you okay with that? It's a huge spoiler because it surprised me. It really did surprise me. So it didn't surprise you at all? You knew.
Okay, but I watched New Amsterdam, and I don't know if anybody watches New Amsterdam. Okay, so that was a scenario that happened in New Amsterdam. So I was like, I noticed some things that when I watched it on the show, I was like, oh my gosh, that surprised me. But when I saw this, I noticed clues, like she never leaves the house. Nobody else ever sees her or communicates with her. And she, we already know that Koff was a figment of her brain. So it was not shocking to me that Layla was not really there.
It's okay. Go ahead. I'm good.
Okay. Like for me, you know, when Kenan comes home and she's looking at Layla, Kenan goes, "Who are you talking to?" is when I went, "Oh, what?" You know, like it's okay. I don't watch much TV. I don't watch much mental dramas. I just don't. So for me, huge, huge, huge surprise. I mean, I know what you're saying. She never leaves. But I can still think about, why does she need to leave? Why does she need to leave? Like, I mean, so I can justify a lot of things. Just the way she was talking to her, I don't know. I just didn't really pick up on things. Because she was actually, like, talking about how Layla would braid her hair. You know, like, she was like, "Layla braided my hair today." And, you know, I just rest on her lap, and it was just so much that I just couldn't, I don't know, it was, I probably have to reread it to really see it, and then to really look into it from a mental issue, because you're right, she knew, we all knew Koff was real, but he wasn't, and he kept showing up, and he was like this real character to her, and he kept showing up. And a lot of times I just wanted to just freaking smack him over the head. Although there were times he did kind of help her, you know, like, "Did you talk to Amr? Did you talk to Amr?" You know, there were all of that too. But So Layla was my surprise. And Layla was also my favorite character because of all the resilience and all that. There was this love. Layla was light and love and happiness and hope and Layla was all those things in this climate. Layla was never angry with Salama. Layla was always the support system. Layla was, if you guys have read Gone with the Wind, is Melanie's character. You know, she's the weaker character kind of a thing, but she's really the strength of the book type of a thing. But yeah, I loved, Layla's my favorite character. I loved all the characters. Amr, I wanted to punch him out, and, you know, we'll get to favorite scenes, but one of my personal favorite scenes is, call it vindictive, call it what you want, but when she said, "Do you want me to save her?" Then it's going to be, you know, no, it's only going to be, what was it, 2,500, you know, it's 2,500, make a decision. There are all these other patients. You want me to save her? Make a decision. He's like, "What kind of person are you? Would you do this?" She's like, "Yes, I would." And oh my gosh, that scene gave me so much. I loved it. Maybe, like I said, I'm vindictive, but I just loved that scene. And I hated her guilt over it. But that's what makes her so realistic. I was just like, don't feel guilty. Just don't feel guilty. He's doing what he needs to do. You have to do what you have to do. This is, you know, when it comes to life or death, don't feel guilty. But that's me. But anyway, favorite characters.
I would say Dr. Zayad. I really liked his character. He's seen a lot too. He's been through a lot. Like, he stepped up, has become a real leader within the community. And he loves these little babies in the ICU. And, you know, just like was willing to sacrifice his life for them. And he just... He really struck, you know, a resonance with me. I'm working with doctors. I know there's really great doctors like that, like Dr. Healy, that I could see them like being like him, like staying there. And yeah, so I loved his character. He was trying to keep Salama like going, and he's trying to help her learn, like help her find purpose. And also like is so happy for her to find love. He doesn't realize, you know, obviously, like the mental state that she's gotten herself into to the degree to which she's gotten herself into that. But I do love how much he tries to support her and the community.
I love Dr. Ziad. And speaking of Dr. Ziad, the scene of the wedding with him officiating the wedding. Oh, man. I mean, that's the thing. This book, that light and that hope. and the love that shines through in this thing is just, whew, I was just, oh, such a beautiful scene. You're right. Love, love, love Dr. Ziad. What a great parent to her. I mean, yes, he's a doctor and all of that, but he took on the role of parent. Like, he took on the role of caregiver. He just, wow, you're right. Dr. Ziad is, yeah, a lot of great characters in this book. I mean, there aren't many characters that you don't love. Like, there's so many characters that you love for so many different reasons. I mean, you have like Layla, Salama, Keenan. What about that scene? What's Keenan's sister, the one she saves her life? What's her name? I mean, when
Lama.
She...
Lama.
Yeah, Lama. Oh my God. After all that, after going through all that, thank you. Like, she actually thanks her. Like, this book is just, oh my God. There's so much. I'm just like, I can't even begin. Like, it's just, yeah, Lama is just, wow. So, so neat. Any other favorite characters? You can tie it in with favorite scenes too, because, you know, I think a character comes up in their behavior, which comes in the scene, you know? So favorite characters, anybody?
Keenan, the hero, obviously. You cannot just, there's no way you cannot like him. He was so likable. He was this personification of chivalry, courage, making the best of a really bad situation. So life gives them a lot of lemons, but they really made the best use of them. And the favorite scene, coming to favorite scene, obviously the big twist, I think the revelation, because of its shock factor, it was a really powerful and strong scene. And then there was a scene in which he took her to her old house where he used to live, and then they climbed 8 stories, and then they sat on the roof with their legs hanging and just looking at the sky. And he said, there's so much bad going on down on the earth, but the sky is still beautiful. So honestly, sometimes when you look at all the destruction and death, you're like, well, at least the sky is still beautiful. So
that was my favorite too.
Mm-hmm.
Aw. You know, I liked Keenan. What I really liked is I loved how the author balanced him out and his doubts about leaving. He was like, no, just take Lama and was it Yusuf, right?
Yusuf,
yeah, take Lama and Yusuf. No, just take them, that's all I care about. And she's like, no, you're coming with me. No, take Lama and Yusuf, that's all I care about. Like, you know, you knew he was gonna go at the end, but he just was not going. And I loved that part of him. It wasn't just a I love you, I'll do anything for you, I'll go with you. It wasn't that. So there was so much realism and so much emotions. Like, it's just so palpable. Every bit of this book is just, you can feel the pulse of every character and every bit of this book.
I thought the whole book, you know, every character was good. They had their own, you know, lovable traits. So for me, personally, I think I liked every character, even if the bad ones, because they behaved in such a way because that's how they had to survive. So my favorite character would have been the little girl, Lama, because even with all the difficulty she went through, all the surgery without anesthesia, you know, trying to get the stuff which was hurting her, you know, and still she had a smile on her face. And then she says thank you to her, you know, even after all that she's been through. And I think her brother too, you know, Yusuf too, he didn't speak. He was, you know, a tragedy just made him lose his voice. But then again, he gets it back, which was like, you know, I like that, you know, I forgot which scene it was, you know, where he got his voice back. But then there was a scene. How did he get his voice back? Does anybody remember that?
It was when Keenan had gotten hurt from the soldiers coming into the hospital, and they go back to the house and he needs medicine.
Yeah, because that scene was, I was like, no, this is not a, you know, what an 18-year-old should go through. where the soldier tries to take advantage of her, saying that, okay, if we can get some time for the main, you know, people to come and take over the hospital, and everyone around couldn't do anything, you know, which was so, oh my God, I'm like, this is only a little bit of what we see, you know, that it's way worse than whatever happens in the real situation. So, yeah, so the whole book I had, all the scenes were good. And the revelation was even shocking to me because I didn't see it coming, because it was so well portrayed that as if she is still alive. Only when Keenan asks, who are you talking to? I'm like, wait, let me go back a few more pages to figure out what is he talking about? You know, good thing I didn't have the audio. I had the book, so, you know, I could go back. So, every scene I thought was good.
You can go back in the audio, but I will tell you the audio was amazing. Amazing. The narrator, her voice, like the accent, Salama, like she was like, it's not Salama, it's Salama, Dr. Ziad, you know, like the Ain. Ain is an alphabet in Arabic. And it's like, Ain. It's like, it goes from the back of the throat. And so all the characters' names, when she says it, Lama, and you, it's just, oh my gosh. And she just so smoothly reads those character names and just reads the story and narrates it. And I don't know. I love the audio. I did. But anyway, Erin.
One of the most impressionable scenes for me was whenever they bring in the patients from the sarin gas and chlorine gas exposure. And I really, like, I specifically remember hearing on the news a number of years ago about a village that had been, it was on, you know, the international news, but a village that had been just overnight, like people in their homes were killed in that exact way. And they showed video, of course, you know, they like blur out the faces, but they just showed the bodies like piled up. And I remember watching that and like crying, and like, I obviously didn't know those people, but I just felt like, oh my gosh, like the devastation of that situation. And this scene really reminded me of that news report. And I mean, I think she brought the helplessness that the medical providers must have felt when they were, if they even had a chance to respond to some those similar attacks. There's no time, like you don't have time, you know, nor did they have any of the equipment to really make a huge impact or a huge difference. So I thought that was one that needed to be brought to people's attention that aren't aware, because that is, I mean, it's a tragedy, but it's also like, you know, there are agreed upon war guidelines or rules, like in the UN, right? And that's a clear violation. I don't think there should be any like, oh, like it's okay to do war in this way. I feel like it's terrible at any level, but I think, you know, most of us would really not be okay with how that happened.
Yeah, like I said, disturbing parts of this book is just so many disturbing like parts. The only thing I will tell you about this book that I felt contrived maybe or little disappointed in was the very, very last scene, like towards the very end. You know, the boat is fine, the boat is fine, the boat is fine, the boat is fine. And then suddenly there's this, like, it's just sudden. Like, it's like, we can't just get him to the shore safely, but we have to randomly create an issue. Like it's just, don't get me wrong. I know there were issues with boats and all of that, but it just felt like a very sudden, I don't know about you guys, like it just felt contrived. That whole scene was, I was just like, okay, you're just doing this just to prolong the agony. You're just trying to, that's how I felt. I mean, I don't know if I had to be disappointed at anything in this book, because everything was perfect, I'm just going to be disappointed at that one scene with the boat and all of that. That was my only qualm about this book. Shanas?
But I think that's what happens, especially when, you know, you have a situation where you want to leave a place, you clutch at anything, you know, at anything. So even if they know the boat is not going to help you reach the shore, still they would get into it. And haven't we heard so many, on the news where how many people have died trying to flee their country, as refugees, as so many other, we've heard even recent times there was I think it was Greece, where you had some boat which sunk because of, overloading of people who were illegal, So I think, yes, this is a situation where you're promised you're going to get out of the country. The boat, you're asking 1,000 times, will it take us to the shore? Will it take us? And that's the assurance you get. Otherwise, what do? They just have to stay back and, face this day in and day out. So I thought it happens. So you captured anything.
I'm not arguing that that happens. I just felt that it was fine all along. And then it was close to the shore is when something happened. Like, I mean, if there was issues and stuff, it was like all along, it was fine. And then suddenly it's like, oh my gosh. I felt, that's how I felt. I was like, I don't know. That's how I felt.
Even now in reality, that's what happens near the shore, few hundred meters from the shore. Most of the stuff happens. That's how the coast guards are able to, save so many people. It never happens in the middle of the ocean, even to this day.
I think this is basically, it practically happens in all movies and novels. There's always a last climax scene in which all kind of like bad things happen, and then in the end everything becomes all right. So the ropes break and the cars crash and all kind of things happen, and people were fine, they were surviving, they were doing good all along, and in the end all kind of misery falls on them. So it but in the end they are fine. So it's a plot ploy. It's a basically
right. I felt it was a plot ploy. Mm-hmm. I didn't appreciate that particular plot ploy. I don't appreciate those plot ploys. I mean, that particular, I think I was tired at that point. I didn't need another plot ploy, is what I'm saying. Even without that plot ploy, this book would have been amazing. Is what I'm saying.
I mean, someone would say even the Layla bit was a plot ploy, because that has been used pretty extensively in other movies, A Beautiful Mind, Psycho, The Sixth Sense. I think there's a recent movie called The Fall in which two characters were stuck on a telephone tower. So this particular plot ploy was obviously part of all those movies. But since we just are not thinking on those lines, it always comes as a shock. For me, even The Beautiful Mind, it came as a shock. And for Sixth Sense, everyone was shocked. So it's a plot ploy,
I mean, okay, me personally, I like some plot ploys. Some I don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. It's a personal, I guess it's a personal choice that I didn't appreciate that particular plot ploy. I think for me, I get tired. At that point, I'm like, I don't want another plot ploy. I'm done. I think I was done at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm kind of like, I am done. You don't have to add a plot ploy to satisfy me or to make this book better. Your book is phenomenal as it is. It's crisp as it is. All the plot ploys you've had so far has worked perfectly. You do not need another one. That was my thought on it. It's a personal preference. Again, you may have liked the plot ploy. You might maybe want another one. Who knows? I don't know. But I mean, that was me.
Yeah, there's a very sad picture of a little girl who was washed ashore trying to escape from Syria. And she was, I think, 8 years old. So that picture has become the face of the misery of Syrian refugees. I think it happened 3-4 years ago. So it is one of the saddest pictures of real time. So poetry has been written on it. There are many poets in Pakistan who wrote poetry in Urdu on that particular picture. So I think she must be wanting to somehow incorporate that tragedy and that moment when that happened into her story also. She must want to, that must be her idea, that I should weave that tragedy also in my story.
Okay. Dr. Jen, anything?
Oh, I think you guys covered all of it, really.
Okay. Anything else, anybody? Character, Shana?
Maybe without that plot ploy, it would have been like, you know, okay, they reach the shore. It's kind of dull, right? This gives you a little, did they reach the shore? Did they get rescued? Did they not get rescued? So, you know, then the little epilogue comes where she says she's in Toronto. So I think, you know, for me, I didn't know how well she could end it.
Yeah, she saw the lights of the boat. It reminded me of Castaway when he was just like floating on that in the ocean and just lost all hope. And then a boat, you could see a big ocean liner crossing by and you are like, did he survive? Did they pick him up? Did they save him? And then you see him walking and then the ending scene. He delivering that package that he never opened. So yeah, again, another plot ploy. Yeah.
Okay. I just felt like if the seas were rough all along, I'd have been stressed all along and I'd be like, oh no, you know, I just felt it was fine. Like it was just fine. And then it's like, oh no, suddenly, like, I don't even know what happened. Like suddenly everyone freaked and suddenly it's like, we got to jump out. Like it was a very sudden, you know, if the boat was going to rock, it could have rocked. I don't know. Maybe I just don't follow much news articles. Maybe I don't know how the ocean works or how water works or how boats work. I don't know.
It's like turbulence. You say, you know, flying along very well and suddenly you have a little turbulence. Similarly, you know, it's a smooth sailing and then suddenly you have a little bit of harsh waves. And then because the boat is so old, it just disintegrates and then you're thrown into the sea. I think, yeah, for me, I like the way she ended it. Except I thought it was a little sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Because I liked the book so much, I wanted to keep reading for another few more pages. But I think she needed to end it.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody? Okay. Title and cover.
I give the cover a 5. It's, if you really notice them at the bottom, it is a destroyed root system of presumably a lemon tree. And then there's a new glorious lemon tree growing out of it. So I do like the cover. I would give the title a 4. I think it's a little long, so it's hard to remember if you're, you know, the exact wording. But I like the symbolism of the title because it's showing the resilience, right? And the hope and all of that we talked about.
I would give it a 5 too because I was thinking the same thing what Erin was saying about, you know, it's a dead tree, a dead root system, and then you have a tree growing and it's a beautiful cover. And the last line she has is, it reminds me that as long as the lemon trees grow, hope will never die. So, you know, I think she's tied it very well with the cover. So I'll give it a 5.
The title also, you give it a 5 or?
Yes.
I haven't really looked at the cover closely. So, you know, I just kind of looked at it. I don't know, like, based on what you guys are saying, it seems amazing. I'm going to go with a 4 and a 4 because, like Erin said, it's a long title. And I'm like, today I come into book club. I'm like, what is the thing when lemon trees grow? Something with lemon trees, lemon tree something. And I have to look up the title. It didn't stick with me. I knew it was something with the lemon trees. So the title didn't fully stick with me because it was too long. And like I said, I didn't analyze the cover. So it sounds amazing. I know me, I'd probably criticize something stupid because that's just who I am. So I'm going to go with a 4 on that. Dr. Jen, you're laughing. You know me.
You know yourself.
You have the mic, so go ahead, Dr. Jen.
I really love the cover too. I thought it was really pretty, and I know it's hard to like see on these things, right? But like, I loved just the design of it. It looks like mosaics almost, and the colors. And I like how at the bottom, like Erin said, there's the broken trees in the background. You see like the cityscape, which is kind of also broken, and then this tree then growing out of the middle of it. So I really like the colors. That cover. So that was definitely a 5. I agree that the title was a little long and the wording was difficult to remember. I like the concept of it being that quote though and what it represented. So ultimately I'll give that a 5 too.
Yeah, I think the cover, it shows the roots look pretty square to me. So I will give it square root of 16. So that's my rating for the cover. The title, she herself, if you have read her dedication where she was thanking people who contributed to the book, she just kept referring to the book as Lemon Trees. She never used the full title herself. So, but the title as is, it is a message of hope. So I like the title the way it is. But I will also remember it as just Lemon Trees. So yeah, I will give 4 to the cover and 4 to the title.
That's interesting, Sophia, that she mentions it as Lemon Trees. And I'm just trying to, personally, I'm trying to think, if the title was just Lemon Trees, would I have liked it? And I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I would not have liked just Lemon Trees because it has no symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this balancing act of, you know, like, what is it? As long as the lemon trees grow. So it's just balancing act.
I just want to say that I haven't read the book. So if I were to pick the book, to me, the title and the artwork or the, they don't go together. The theme wise, I wouldn't pick the book. I would love the cover, but you would want something more serious on it, especially if the book is about. I couldn't tell what the book was about. So it was a mismatched for me. But of course, after I read the book, it would be a different story. But I thought it was, you know, and again, in my mind, I had the Lululemon one too. Like maybe it's that, like that kind of, then I read it. I was like, that is a really hard, tough book. But I like it when, for example, All My Rage and books like these, which kind of direct the audience to some certain theme. I like that when the title itself has, of course, there's a theme to it, but the theme, the first thing is they don't go together. I like her name written on it because that goes with the theme. So I wish there was something more foreign about it, maybe a name or something or some word that had brought some another culture to mind. And secondly, like I said, that the title doesn't lure me towards the seriousness of the book.
See, that's something that's significant for someone who hasn't read the book, and it's such an amazing book. If this book doesn't lure you to it, that's a marketing problem. That's a problem. I mean, once you read the book, I mean, we've read the book, we're like, wow, does this symbolism and all of that? But then there's this marketing issue of it that's not inviting you to read a book that I know you would absolutely enjoy. And you're a reader too. And somehow someone has dropped the ball somewhere, is what I'm thinking.
Some marketing flaw or something.
Potentially. Or... I mean, you know, I think it's important for your point of view on this, because our point of view after having read the book, it's different. The million-dollar question, the reason we have title and cover is, would you have walked into the store not knowing anything, pick this book and go, I want to read this book?
No. And I have to say that I don't like things. I am very eclectic person. I love themes together. I love, you know, different kind of aesthetics mixed together. But somehow the aesthetic of the cover and the title they don't go well at this point. So it's not that I want an Arab book to look like an Arab cover to look like, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying there has to be, the fusion has to be done artfully. That's what I believe it, in a style. So,
okay, so final rating of the book, like final rating.
So I just want to point out that in her acknowledgments, she wrote about the cover that, thank you to David Curtis for giving me the cover of my dreams. There is a whole story in the cover alone. So we may have
to write. I totally understand. That's what I'm saying. After you read the book, for sure, I know there has to be something, you know, the way you guys talked about the book. And even when I read a little bit of it, that it seems like there is something to it. But my point of view from coming from a person who's not read the book, that's where I was a bit, you know, but I'm sure it makes sense. It definitely makes perfect sense.
Okay, final rating of this book. I'm a 5, solid 5. There's no doubt about it. I don't care. It's a solid 5 for me. Anyone else?
I'll give it a 5 too. I haven't finished the epilogue though, so
5 for me as well.
Sophia, you want to go?
Dr. Jen is going.
Oh, yeah. I I was trying to think of a reason why I wouldn't give it a 5, and I can't think of one. So I guess I'm going to give it a 5 too.
Sophia, so are you? Is it the square root of 25? Is that right? No. Are we right? No? Yes? No? Maybe?
No, square root of 22. So it's close to 5, but not fully 5.
Where's my calculator? I need to know what the square root of 22 is now.
We have a calculator. We don't need one.
Oh, we have a calculator. The calculator says it's the square root of 22. I need a number. I need a number. 4 point what?
Okay. So, and the reason I just docked a few points off, first of all, there was just too much gore for my taste, and I'm not a person who can just handle this much gore and this much realism. So it was just a bitter pill to swallow, but obviously. So I skipped some of the pages, and I never just use the audiobooks. I always read them so I can turn over pages. And I was reading it on Kindle. I was traveling this weekend, so during the flight, I was reading it. So one reason is too much gore. The other reason is I think it was a bit too long, although you didn't want it to end. I didn't want it to end. But if the good bits could be more extended and the bad parts could be just edited a little bit. Third part, which again, you people may differ from my opinion. She was just shown as an 18 years old. I wish they have shown her as maybe a 20 years old, someone who have spent maybe 2 years in med school. It would have made the thing more plausible, more believable that she, just a pharmacy student who is just 18, who has barely done 1 year of college. I know, because I'm a teacher, that they only teach very, very basic core courses in the first year of college in pharmacy school. So she is literally, she does not have any background knowledge of medicine. And then she was doing operations and surgery. So it just looks a little something that was difficult for me to believe. If instead of that, if they have shown her as someone who has done maybe 1.5 years of med school and then thrown into that situation, so she learned how to hold a scalpel and hold a scissor and do incisions, make cuts, do sutures. And now she is just using that really, really base knowledge to do complex surgeries. It would have just made the whole situation more believable to me. And her age was just shown to be also like extremely tender. 18 is just for getting married and all that. It's hard to believe. It just shows that maybe in all Muslim families, people just get married, because Leila got married. She was pregnant at 18, and she was also got married at 18, although her situation was different, obviously. So those are stereotypes that people associate with Muslims, that maybe everyone just gets married at 18 and have kids at 18 years old. So if she has shown her characters, her girls, to be around 20, I think that would have been better, 20, 21.
I mean, as a Muslim author, I felt like she, you know, I think her portraying 18, I didn't have a problem with the age. And I also personally did not have a problem with the fact she was a first-year pharmacy student doing all these complex surgeries, because it was that drastic, oh my God, shock effect of what a war can do. If there's no one else, that's the thing. The book says there's no one else, and they drag a pharmacy student. You know, so it was, I personally was just that eye-opening situation about war that I felt was brought up by that. So that's, I had no problem with that. 18-year-olds getting married, I mean, who am I to say who gets married when? I didn't find it as a Muslim stereotype per se. Maybe I was focused more on everything else that was going on. That's me. Rifat first, then Shana's.
Yeah, I just wanted to maybe comment, or not a reply, but like, you know how wars can mature people sooner than another 18-year-old living in a different kind of situation? I haven't read the book, but that's what, you know, the whole Syrian generation, even Palestine, and the, you know, kids are 11-year-old kids are like, you know, thinking they have to take care of so many things. So maybe that's what it is. Do you think it was that, or was it really something that you did not find?
No, you are right that, yeah, it brings that kind of maturity. And now I'm thinking about that other book we read, the Chile, the one with Long Petal of the Sea, that there also that doctor was performing surgeries when he was not really a doctor. The Victor, he was doing all those surgeries, and he was not really a doctor. He went to med school later in Chile. So, but he was doing heart surgeries and all that. So, yeah,
And I was going to say the same thing, that I think even we are from Pakistan when we go back home, and then, you know, you do see, first of all, of course, war is a situation where people have to come, whoever is good at, they have to pick and then do it. And it's, if a surgery needs to be done, then whoever they pick from, you know, if she's the only pharmacy, I don't know the situation, but I think, and I've lived here for almost 26 years, and we do have, and I know we have doctor here, Dr. Jen, I'm not, but, and we have Dr. Shanaz too, and you're a dentist too. But I think there's a lot more, not per se red tape, but if you understand what I'm saying, in like, you know, you nobody gives you an opinion unless they send you to a specialist, which is very good. And we are so used to of that thing that the PCP is never going to tell us anything other than if our vitals are okay or if the blood work came. So I think, which is very good, of course, that's where America has reached. And of course, there's insurance, there's coding, there's a lot of things that dictates that. But in countries like Pakistan, India, and even Syria, and I think a doctor can tell a lot more. A doctor has a lot more authority than I see in the US. I do not necessarily like that. But my sister and I have pretty much the same condition these days. I don't know. I think I told you I have some headache, and she had the same thing. She already got the diagnosis. She already has the medicine. I had, after 4 months, had the vestibular testing yesterday, and I still don't know what's going on with me. So I'm just saying it's a very good thing. I love the thoroughness and everything, but somehow, sometimes, and I don't know, I think Dr. Shanaz, you probably have gone to medical school in India or Pakistan, right?
Yeah, in India.
So we have different, like, you know, like red, less hoops to jump. And I'm not saying which one is good and which one's not good. But I do know that a lot of that is dictated because of all those liability issues and all that. And, you know, I mean, things like those. So maybe that's another thing, which the rawness of a human talent, if you will, and the need. I don't know.
Okay, Shanaz, you put your hand down.
What was Sophia saying? Something I was looking. Oh, yeah, the, like, how you cannot fathom first year, what's the name, pharmacy student doing all this. When situations arise, even just a little bit of knowledge saying you have to suture this way, you have to do this, you know, just with the guidance of Dr. Ziad, you know, she learned some things. And yes, maybe I think, you know, it can happen. You know, even anybody who has a basic knowledge, I'm sure pharmacy student will have some little bit of knowledge. And she was willing to learn as well. And then, because the situation warranted, even the janitors and people who were doing other stuff were made to do the job of a nurse or a medical assistant or whatever was needed at that moment, because it's a war-torn area, you need people to step up. So I think it is plausible. It is something which can be done. Because even as a medical student, it's just the training, you know. You have somebody teach you something the first time you pick it up. Maybe you might do it wrong, but then again, it's just experience. You know, the more times you do the same suturing blindly with your eyes closed, you can do it the 50th time. So, you know, so I think it's just, and an 18-year-old, I think, can grasp more than a 50-year-old. That's what I think. Because, and especially when you're put in that situation, you want to help people around you. So I'm sure that's my take on it, Sophia. I'm not, you know, it's just my take on it. So I think it is possible. That's what I thought. So for me, I thought the book was, it could be done. Whatever they did, it could be done. And as Rifat was saying, yes, in India, even now, because the system, I mean, of course, US is way advanced, but still, you know, you get so many things done much way quicker because of the insurance system. I think we don't need to go into that because it's a whole new topic, you know. So, of course, every one of us are sailing in the same boat, trying to get ourselves, you know, tested, which is not happening. You know, we have a huge long wait period, something which we cannot help, you know. We have to go through it. So, yeah.
Aaron, you had your hand up and you put it down.
Oh, I was just going to say the same thing. Like there are a lot of historical documents here in the United States about, like, especially during the Civil War, which is probably the closest thing that we've had to this. I mean, I know it's different, like technology levels, right? But kind of the same thing where communities were very war torn. They would use veterinarians, they would use morticians to do medical procedures on patients. And they were oftentimes taking housewives who maybe had like a little bit of knowledge to keep their households healthy. They would take them and train them to work as nurses if they were close to the battlefield, right? So it happens. I don't think that even though that was in the 1800s, I don't really think it's probably very different today when you're dealing with a circumstance of a war-torn country and it's in the community, right? It's affecting the community. So I thought that was believable to me. I don't think people were really much worried about, well, partly because it seemed like all the doctors were purposefully taken out, you know, by the regime. And so I don't think people were worried too much because the alternative wasn't, they had nothing. And the other thing is, in my life, I can see the desperation from kind of an opposite view. So I, as a genetic counselor, I was training at a medical school, University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. And so my grandpa knew that. And when I came home on break one time, he had a beef farm, a cow farm, and he had an emergency with one of his cows, and there was not any vets that could come and take care of the cow, and she needed to have an IV, like a calcium drip IV put in because she had milk fever, is what we call it here. I don't know what the actual vet term for it is. I just know the farmer term for it. So he could get access to an IV at the vet store, but he didn't know how to put it in himself without a vet. And he tried every vet, couldn't get them. And he was like, well, you put it in. And I was like, not even any, like, I was a phlebotomist trained and that's it. And I was like, well, how hard can this be? And the cow's going to die if I don't do it. So I can at least try. And the cow lived. So, I mean, that's not even war, right? Like, that's just an emergency situation. So I can see where people might in a war where it's more high stakes, like be like, okay, I can give it a try because it's death, if not. So.
Way to go, Erin, on saving cows and all of that. Wow, way to go. Shauna, do you have your hand up?
I know. I was going to say the same thing. Erin, you're now my daughter's, you know, the go-to person, the best person she knows, I'm sure. If she hears the story, she's going to be like, I need to meet her.
Like the cow saver. Woohoo! Anyway, on that positive note, I think we should close today's book club. So I want to say thank you all for coming, and it was an amazing discussion, and I hope you all have a great evening.
And that's it for this episode of Book Club. I'm getting caught up. So we have one book talk coming up for Verity by Colleen Hoover, and one book club for the book Orphan Train. Of course, after that, there's going to be end of month, end of year, and so we'll see where all this goes. I did say after that, but we don't know. I think end of month, end of year is going to be before the other two, you know, book club and book talk and all that jazz. I am getting caught up. It's going to be exciting. I'm getting more bookish, as I've told you guys. It's really cool. I just applied to Macmillan Audio influencer thing. I don't know if I'll get in, but if I do, it's going to be amazing. Regardless, I'm back. I'm back on my Instagram account. I'm just back to reading and back to this podcast and all of it. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be amazing. So just stay tuned. Before I go, if you loved this episode or any of my previous episodes, please take a moment to write me a review on Apple Podcasts. Please share this podcast with your family and friends and through your social media channels. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram on Living a Life Through Books. I'm also on Clubhouse. Look me up by name. I'm on TikTok. My tag is at Dr. Shanaz Ahmed. You can reach me through email. My address is livingalifethroughbooks@gmail.com. My website is shahnazahmed.com. That is shahnazahmed.com. The opening and closing music to this and all my previous episodes was composed by my husband, Brad Slavik. I'm Dr. Shahnaz Ahmed with Living a Life Through Books signing off. Remember to water the seeds within you. It's time.